Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast. This is Manuel Lemus, the regular host of the podcast. And as ever, I have here with me Michael Kimsel.
Are you saying I'm not regular?
You are ever regular.
Okay, yeah, it's a little personal, but good morning.
How are you doing, Mike?
Well, do you really want to know? Because I'm not sure we have that much time.
It would be a long story, right?
Well, I've been having back problems, and I've been going to physical therapy for the last month, getting kind of pricey and rather expensive. Well, and for all this Obamacare stuff going on, it ain't helped me one dime. I'm still paying for all this physical therapy stuff. So
you'll pay back in one less vote.
Well, you know, maybe by the time I'm 70, I'll get some of this money that I'm being forced to put in back. Let's see. So I've discussed politics. I could probably discuss religion and sex as well, too. I'd like to alienate everybody. So other than that, that's kind of the TLDR version is, I'm okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, on this episode, which is number 17, we are going to cover several interesting topics, some more directly related with JavaScript, others not so much, but always somewhat related. And we're going to start with one about an impressive tool, I can call it that, because for now it's more like a demo program. Named Root 3D, which is basically a 3D editor that takes advantage of the CSS3 3D transforms that the more current versions of the browsers are implementing. And this tool was developed by Felipe Moura. We had him in a past episode. He was here talking about Brazil JS, which is an event that goes on in Brazil dedicated exclusively to JavaScript. But this is a different topic, a different project of Felipe. Actually, Felipe is my co-host of the Portuguese version of this podcast. And in the last episode, he has been talking a bit about this project. And it is quite interesting. It's quite impressive what can be done with a tool like this. Michael, did you look into this tool? What did you think about the possibilities that were demonstrated?
Well, I did get it to work. It works in Firefox 11 on my MacBook. Did not get it to work in Chrome, but it works in Firefox 11. And I mean, double check. I'm using 11. It's 11.0. It's interesting. I'm not much of a 3D modeler person, but it's impressive what can be done. I can add an element, and as I'm adding things, there's a lot of sliders that let me change in real time, change height, width, translucency, rotation, and so on. And then all of that gets added to one model that can then be rotated around itself or zoomed in and out from. I don't know if I mentioned it. Well, it kind of harkens back to me for 20 something years ago, like 3D editors on an Amiga computer I used to have.
Yeah.
But those were, you would set all these things in text files, whether it was ray tracing or 3D modeling, and then you would render something and you'd get something back 15 minutes later.
Right.
And what we're seeing now is all, this is not news to anybody, but for old fogies like me, it feels just weird to be seeing this kind of stuff. And that this is, you know, I would say even 10 years ago, this would have been something that you would get in Flash. You would have got a Java applet or an ActiveX control, and it would have been a big deal. And the big deal now is that in some ways it's not that big a deal. It's just using all those technologies that are built right into the browser.
Right. Well, the part of using text files, I think, did not change much, except that now you are doing it with the CSS, using 3D transforms.
That's a good point. Yeah,
and
good
some
point.
Some JavaScript to alter the parameters and make all this real. And one detail of a comment that Felipe did on this is that basically he started this project, he says, because he was willing to model the furniture that he wanted to have in his new house. And he seemed to not be very happy with the existing tool. So I think he was not happy with AutoCAD and whatever the other 3D modeling tools that exist. Well, I think he was making it up just to make an impressive case of this work, and it's really impressive. And for those that do not are not running a browser that is capable of supporting all the 3D transforms that are required to be used in this these projects, they can always watch the videos that appear on the project of the on the page of the project, and I'll be posting the links in the show notes as usual. And there is also a link to vote on this project in the Mozilla Derby page. Philippe is encouraging everybody that like the project to go to that page, vote on the project, so he gets more support, more encouragement to keep it going. And for those that really liked it, please go ahead and do it, because it's always great to see these projects.
I think it has a like.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was it. I liked it. Okay. Yeah.
And this is one of the very interesting topic that I was willing to cover. Another very interesting topic about something that is relatively recent is about this project by Brett Victor. He's a French guy, I was not quite sure if this is a tool that is available for download or not, but what it basically seems to be is a sort of a suite for creating games. And as we can see in the videos of the project, there are some there is some support to alter the programming in real time and see how it affects the games. In terms of stuff like the movements of the graphics and how the controls affect the animations, and it was quite impressive. Michael, did you look into that?
I did watch some of the video, thinking that this would be this is a tool that we can download ourselves. It doesn't seem to be that. A little French that I could read, and then finally translated through Chrome. This video is just describing some of his thoughts, is what I could tell, describing his thoughts on and how he uses JavaScript to do game development. But it doesn't look like this is a tool that's being released or shared with anybody else right now. But it's still impressive nonetheless, just to see that. And I think the point that I got from the article, perhaps hopefully translated, is just that JavaScript can do this sort of thing, and that this would be hard to do in any compiled language. Part of the reason that you can do these sorts of things is because of the dynamic runtime nature of JavaScript. So Whether that's 100% true or not, I leave to the computer science geeks.
Well, it is interesting because it alters the whole environment as you change the files. I don't know if he was saving the files and somewhat the game engine was detecting if the file was changed to reload it somehow, because that is what it seemed to be doing, but I don't know if it was the case. Anyway, I think most people is expecting to have a sort of standalone tool that could work like that to develop games or any other kind of JavaScript application. It would be quite impressive if that would be available.
Sure.
I'm sure if somebody made that available for a reasonable amount of money, I'm sure it would sell a lot, because it's really impressive and useful. It certainly reduces the cycle of development. You don't have to save the changes and wait for it to reload all the files and run them again to see how it affects the gameplay. For instance, if you are testing a certain stage of a game, which is in the middle of the game, if you have to reload all the files and restart the game, it would probably would not be so productive, I think. Mm.
And this is kind of a side topic, but I wonder, you said people would pay for it. I don't know. I mean, I think there's always going to be some people that will pay, but I don't know. I'm just found talking to some of this is recent discussions, but kind of my own thoughts too, is that for a long time I've resisted paying for any tools, any development tools at all. Open source. I'm an open source free guy. And
yeah. Well, it depends. If you are going to make money from the result of your work, sometimes it.
You'd think that. But I don't know. In some ways, the world of professional JavaScript editing, professional JavaScript tools, I think is still yet to come. I don't think we've seen good full integrated tools that let you do a lot of stuff end to end yet out in the marketplace, free or paid. But
yeah.
I'm surprised at how many people I meet that won't ever pay for any tools at all.
Yeah, I think it all depends on what you are doing. For instance, I don't know if you are familiar with that Unity 3D editor.
That's an example.
There is a free version. It's a freemium model. There is a free version, but if you want to actually go professional and develop for several platforms at the same time, you pay good money for the tool. I think the minimum is $1,500. It's not exactly a cheap tool, but it's quite complex.
But you have a free version that you can try and all that. I guess I was kind of thinking of more of editors, like IDEs. I'm really thinking of PHP, because I had a discussion with people a few weeks ago, and they were just complaining about all the free editors out there. Like, there's all these free tools. Well, these all suck. This sucks. You could try this one. Oh, well, that costs money. Like, it's $100. When I realize for some people if you're in Thailand or Vietnam or someplace, $100 might be a lot of money.
Yeah.
I'm talking to somebody in a coffee shop in America. They probably spend $100 a year on coffee, maybe $100 a month on coffee. Yeah. And yet something that is core central to how they make their living, they wouldn't spend $100 on. And
yeah. So basically, as you said, the open source people mentality.
Yeah. Spend $2,000 on a high-end MacBook laptop, but you won't spend $50 or $100 on a tool that will save you, dozens of hours per month, maybe, or certainly per year.
That's also in part from people that either develop all their software or develop the software they produce using open source frameworks. So they're not used to pay for anything.
Maybe, yeah. And I didn't mean to derail this too much, but it just kind of sparked that when you said that. Like, it would, and I'd forgotten about Unity. So I mean, certainly they're out there. Perhaps at the forefront of that. Yeah. I'd like to see more competition in that space.
Right. And I think people would pay good money to have a tool, because it provides a different level of productivity that I don't see any other tool to provide. Like,
I agree.
This tool seems to provide. I don't know if this is a standalone tool or if it is part of a larger development. I don't know if it even has a name. You just call the Brett Victor tool.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it would be interesting to mention it, because it was all related with JavaScript, as you can see on the videos. The guy is editing JavaScript, which is part of the his engine to control his game. But well, if he has a tool, I think the world would be waiting. And also mentioning games, I think when we talk about JavaScript, it's not just browser-based games, because you can use, for instance, the JavaScript to create games that will run on environments supported by Titanium. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
So, and regarding this, we'll be talking about a class that was just recently published that can work in devices that are not exactly browser-based, and you can take advantage of that class, although it is not specific to any type of device. But moving on with the podcast, another topic that I was willing to talk about is about this site, microjs.com.
Ah, yes, microjs.com.
Yeah,
and I was just introducing it for you. There you go.
and
I could sing it. When you want me to sing it?
I don't know. Maybe in a foreign language. Oh, we already passed the French.
Oh, que lastima. It was chanson de moi, chanson qui s'appelle Micro JS.
Yo.
Micro jazz.com. How's that? That was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah, they are going to give an hard time to the guy doing the transcription.
Anyway, sorry.
No, I think he's already having fun when he will be listening to the podcast.
What's his name?
I don't know.
Hello, whoever, and good morning.
Yeah, because I keep switching between different people. Anyway, getting back to this MicroJS site, which is basically an interesting site, which I think it is the result of the abundance of small JavaScript libraries to do simple things, but there are some that can be used for similar purposes. And what this site helps you is to pick libraries for certain purposes. You just point the purposes on which you would like to use existing libraries, like for instance games, and it will list just a few libraries that would be suitable for whatever purposes you picked. And I think this is interesting. I never seen a site like this. It may be useful for not just to pick the libraries, but also for people to know about libraries that they were not aware.
Yeah.
So it is interesting to give some exposure to those libraries that otherwise would probably go anonymous.
Ah, this is from Thomas Fuchs. I hope I'm saying his name right. I'm probably not. He's the guy behind Prototype, I do believe, or Scriptaculous. And yeah. So this is it's a collection of tools. It's really a nice little what's the word I'm looking for? Purpose-based directory. Apologies to Joel Osteen, but you select, I want to do data manipulation, I want to do JSON, I want to do templating, and it's showing you all these really small, and it's giving you the size, like here's a micro-templating class that's 0.4K, here's one that's 1.9K, 2.3K, and so on. So you can see pretty quickly if something's big or small, and maybe you want to focus on just the smaller ones. What's interesting is, even though it's all about micro.js, there isn't a sort. I kind of half expected these to be sorted by the smallest libraries first, and there doesn't seem to be any particular order to these as they come up.
It's probably on their to-do list.
Maybe. Or maybe I'm just so advanced in my thinking that I came up with some functionality that no one had ever considered before. That's a possibility, too.
Yeah, well, I don't know what was the final goal, but it seems to be that it was to give exposure to libraries that otherwise would probably not get any attention.
Yeah.
Well, I know some of these are more popular than others, but there are most of these that are listed here are totally unknown for me. And it seems they are, if not all, at least part is available on GitHub. And I think this site aims to be somewhat a complementary function to GitHub. Since when you go to GitHub as an author and publish a project there, it does not get automatic exposure. You have to do your own marketing.
Bastards.
Well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We
say that on the podcast.
Obviously, it's not their fault. I think it's not their purpose. Can you imagine them doing a specific marketing effort for many thousands of projects?
It would be sure. I can certainly imagine it.
Well, you can use this. Well, since these are JavaScript libraries, they could also publish it in JS classes and any other classes, sites that.
That was so subtle. You just slipped that in there, and it didn't. It's like you weren't even trying. That was so.
This is a comment is related with somebody that was actually complaining about sites like JS classes and PHP classes. But they serve a purpose, which is to keep people in touch with libraries and packages of their own interest. And they were comparing with those sites with GitHub, but in the end, GitHub does not do the marketing effort that people hope to get. If they just drop the libraries there, nothing happens. You have to do your own marketing, and this site MicroJS somewhat attempts Well, I'm not sure if it is in that the intention, but it can serve that purpose of giving a bit more of exposure and actually more targeted, because you can select the purpose that you want for the libraries that you are looking for, and it narrows the search and shows you only those that match your purposes as you specify them. And well, I think this can be useful. Anybody that was looking into libraries for any specific purpose can go here. It's very simple, the URL, microjs.com.
Yep.
But it will still be listed in the podcast episode notes.
I could sing it again if you'd like.
Not sure.
Okay. Obviously, you don't want that. Okay, that'll be in the bonus cuts. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, you can put in a bonus track after the episode version of the podcast URL sung by Michael Kimson. Anyway, moving on. Now talking about something I'm not sure. I did not see this before. I'm not sure if that is so recent, which is a new extension for PHP that can integrate with V8. V8 is that JavaScript compiler engine done by Google that it powers several projects like Chrome, Google Chrome, and Node.js as well. And what this extension seems to allow is that you execute JavaScript code from a PHP script and interact with. I'm not sure if interacting is the right word, but I think you can pass parameters to JavaScript code and get back some results.
To the raw code, it looks like to the raw code you can, but you can't, say, create JavaScript objects and interact with them in PHP like you could with the Java bridge from some time ago. It's not a bridge between it looks like it's just, it looks, and I shouldn't say just, but it looks like it's something that executes.
Yeah.
You just give a string and then you say to the V8 engine object, hey, execute this string. And you get whatever the results of that output are. Or you can get a V8 JS exception object to get one of the two things back. It looks like you'll either get a string back or an exception back.
Right. Well, I think it can still be useful. Probably it would be even more useful if, just because it does use V8, this is not exactly the same as running Node.js. Programs, because Node.js itself comes with extensions that are part of the Node.js project, and I think they are not exactly written in pure JavaScript. Well, anyway,
it looks interesting, but it looks very just experimental, and probably this is a proof of concept to search for somebody to say, yes, I can do this, but I'm just not sure what the use case for most people would be right now.
Well, if you have some JavaScript code, you can run it. So you don't have to port it to PHP to use it from your PHP scripts. I don't know what would be the use case for this in practice, but I'm sure somebody will remember a certain situation. Well, for Java, I know there are some very useful use cases, like for instance, certain banking systems only allow you to interface with them using some Java jars, and you would have to use those jars to communicate with the bank.
Yeah, I guess I can see some use cases for it, but it's feel even in that case, the idea of the PHP Java bridge. And I played with it a little bit. At the time, I didn't have any pressing need for it. But it would seem to me, if you have jar files that you need to use and access, it might be, in some cases, it might be easier if you're doing a small amount to load them into PHP and use them. From anything bigger than a couple of use cases, and it might make more sense to just drop them into something else and write a small web service around it to expose that and just have two processes running. You got your Java. And I would think the same thing with the V8.js here. For small amounts, but if you've got a large set of JavaScript, you're not going to just put it in one string and execute it. You're going to want it to run long term, probably do things that it doesn't seem are possible with this right now.
Well, one use case was just brought to my mind just now. For instance, imagine you want to render some HTML that has JavaScript inside, and if you don't have a JavaScript, a real JavaScript engine, you cannot run it to see what is the outcome. And at least this way, maybe you could use this V8 JavaScript engine to assist in that task. I don't know if it will be enough, probably. I don't know if this V8 engine fully supports DOM objects to be able to do that. I don't know, it's just a thing that could be a possibility, but I really did not even check this close enough to assert whether it would be the case or not. But, well, whoever likes these experimental projects, specifically dealing with languages, can always try and see what would be, would it be useful for.
There you go.
Okay, well, now moving on with the podcast, we're going to pass to our regular session of...
You don't want to talk about Browser Quest, the big game release from Mozilla?
Oh, you are right. I
guess you don't want to talk about it.
That's fine. It's just that I did not note it down here in my...
Your son likes it so much. He's just such a Browser Quest addict. I just thought we should mention it.
Yeah.
It's a Browser Quest, just a game that came out today from Mozilla. It's actually reminds me of this is a very standard game interface, but the intro actually reminds me of King's Quest for some reason. Browser Quest. This is a massively multiplayer adventure game, all written in the browser. Works in Firefox 11. Broke Chrome for Manuel.
Yeah, right.
Can you believe that? A Mozilla project breaking Chrome. I thought he must have done something wrong.
Right. Obviously not. I'm using those unstable versions of Chrome.
Yeah. Oh, the ones that get released? Ooh, sorry.
Yeah, you can blame it on that.
But the so core idea...
It's not Mozilla's fault.
The core idea behind this Browser Quest is it's a very basic role-playing sort of game, and you move around and do stuff. And there's not a lot of... purpose to the game so much, and like there's not a princess to save, anything like that, but there's just a lot of people online, and you can move around and interact with them some, but the more interesting thing here is that all the code is was put on GitHub today, so people can experiment with it and test this out and run it on their own machines too. Unfortunately, it seems to play a lot of sound and music, and I couldn't find a way to shut that off. I hit the little icon for sound, and it still kept playing. So maybe it's not perfect in Firefox 11.
Yeah, it's still a beta.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, it just seemed to be...
Browserquest.mozilla.org is the address for that. Thought I'd share that. Okay, now moving on.
Well, just wanted to comment that it just seemed to be to demonstrate some technologies, probably WebSockets. I don't know. All these games require a great deal of interactivity with a server, because being multiplayer games, somewhat the interaction between players has to be done through a server. So it's very likely it is related with WebSockets and probably something else that assures that the games are quite interactive.
Yep.
Well, anyway, but did you try to play anything of the game, game or is it fake?
Well, it's a game in that you can go around and do stuff. I don't think there's a end goal in mind so much. I just poked around for a little bit. The sound was I was trying to do something else and the sound was a little too loud for me. But I sent you a link to a Mozilla.org article which has a bit more information about the tech behind it. It is WebSockets, and there is some Node.js behind it, and Canvas and local storage and all that stuff. So it looks to be fairly complex, and there's mobile versions and all that kind of fun stuff. So
mobile versions, do you mean browser-based or
iPad and iPhone?
Right, but what I was asking is it would those mobile versions be native applications or?
No, they look to be all mobile. They're not mobile. They're not native apps. They're just using a mobile browser is what it looks like.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's probably an interesting project just for those that are willing to learn how you can build games with these technologies.
Sure.
I'm sure many people will be interested on this, although there are plenty of projects already used for this purpose of interaction.
There you go.
I don't know if they have any figures on the number of simultaneous players that can be handled.
There were 75 when I was on just a minute ago.
But I do not see any information on server requirements to handle many simultaneous users. Anyway, maybe this is something to explore and learn more about it, to see if this is something that can scale to a large number of players or not. Well, there's another interesting topic to study for those that have more time and are interested in these topics.
Okay,
now back to what I was going to say, but totally forgot that you wanted to mention about BrowserCast. Moving on, and we are going to move on to one regular section, which is talk about the latest classes that were published on JS Classes. Anyway, I just wanted first to comment on a few features that were added recently to the JS Classes site, as well PHP Classes site, which are sites that are based on the same code base. And one of those features is basically one that allows authors to link themselves, link their packages, the pages of their packages, to a page that they could have on Google Profiles or Google Plus. If you are an author and you have one Google Profile page, you can add a link to your page in the JS Classes site that lists all your packages, and that hints Google that you are the author of those codes. And for instance, if somebody or some other site copies the pages of JS Classes or some other site that use this kind of linking, Google will still be able to know that this is the original page, and any references to your work will be listed first to your package page, your author page in the JS Classes. And this was just a new feature that was actually notified to all authors that are following the site, so they can add these links. And the end result of this initiative is that eventually they will get more visibility in search engine results. And another side effect that will probably happen later is that, for instance, somebody searches Google for your name, these pages will appear in the search results with your picture on the side, actually the picture that you use on the Google Profiles or Google Plus. And this gives you your pages a distinguished appearance in the Google search results. It's not a big deal, it's just something that interests mostly authors. Another feature that was released recently is a new mode that authors can use to expose their packages they published on the JS Classes, PHP Classes sites. Basically, what happens is that when some users come to the site, they start seeing the files of the packages to learn about the code. And if there is this requirement of the user has to be registered to access the files, some users may be upset and not be willing to register, and so they may give up on studying further your code. So there is now a new mode that authors can switch in their package options. So the user is only required to be registered if they download all package or actually the class package, class files. So if they just want to see examples, they will not be required to be registered and logged in to see the code. And this eventually also will result in a greater exposure of the package files to the search engines, because they will be able to see the whole code and index it, and if it matches more searches, eventually it will bring more users to visit the packages and learn about the projects. And finally, one feature that is at least not implemented by the time we are recording this, but it will be implemented soon, so maybe when the users are listening to this podcast, it will be already be available, which is something that is nothing new, but the site did not yet feature, which is the possibility to register to the site using a Facebook account, and eventually other site accounts that support OAuth. I think GitHub and Twitter and others support OAuth, and they will be able to log in using those accounts, and this hopefully will minimize the chance of having users to lose interest just because there is this registration requirement. Anyway, this was just summary of the latest features that were implemented in the site. I just wanted to mention them here. They are mostly targeted to users that are also authors that submit their own work in the site. But now moving on to the actual section in which you mentioned the latest classes, objects published in the site. Michael, which classes would you like to mention this
week? Well, there's a couple that jumped out at me, both visual. One is called Filter.js, and this demonstrates a way of applying different types of filters, whether it's color filters or edge detection filters and things like that, on images. And that is from Foo123. He's from Greece, and I don't really think his name's Foo, as I was telling you before. It's probably Stavros123. Really?
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Anybody called Foo123 in Greece?
Well, it might be a nickname, but Foo, my extensive knowledge of the history of names in the Mediterranean region leads me to believe that Foo is not a traditional name. It might be one of these newfangled names. Like in America, we've got you've got Chase and in Jordan and things like that, which were not names 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So maybe Foo is a new wave of Grecian names.
Foo
anyway, yes, Foo123. Thank you. So the filter class was one, and the other one was Har, which I think basically is encouraging piracy of his work. H-A-A-R is another class that Foo123 also contributed, all the way from Greece, and it's a face detection algorithm in JavaScript.
Yeah.
It's actually face detection and mouth detection. Now, I ran it with the sample face that he provides. It didn't detect the face. I was trying to trace through the code, and honestly, not that I couldn't understand it because it's so complex. There's just a lot of math kind of stuff in it. But it did detect a mouth. There was a separate example code for detecting the mouth, and it actually detected a mouth, and that made me a little more curious about what is it actually doing in the code. Unfortunately, I'm not good enough to figure it out. I can't read Greek JavaScript too well. It was all Greek to me. I'm kidding. It was all JavaScript to me. But those were two that kind of recent contributions in the last month or so that jumped out as interesting.
Yeah, actually, the filter one is, if you look there, although it's not exactly something trivial to do in JavaScript, it's not exactly something new to do in any language. It's mostly applying transformations to pictures, and it all works on top of Canvas, but sure. The actual algorithms are implemented in JavaScript. So if you want to do some image processing, you can do this all with this package, which is not a very small package and has many small components. Well, now for the HAR package, which basically can detect shapes in general, it's not just faces or mouth. So what happens is that it requires a sort of data file. Well, it's not exactly data, it's, well,
pattern information of some sort.
Well, it's data, but it is in a JSON format. And it's a data structure that defines several parameters, well, actually many parameters, to guide the actual detection algorithm to detect that specific type of shape. And from what I could understand, not that I am an expert on this topic, but there is this OpenCV program that generates these data structures.
Yeah, it says here this is a port of OpenCV. So, yes, there you go.
Well,
you've burst my bubble. That's excellent. Thank you so much.
No, actually, it's not a port. OpenCV generates those data structures that are used to perform the actual detection. So the actual class is sort of generic for detecting shapes, but if you provide different data structures for different shapes, it will be able to recognize them. So you can use the same class for different types of detections that you want to perform. And this is interesting because the same author has also submitted a PHP version of this class to the PHP classes site.
Okay.
And this is very, very interesting because it's not a trivial type of application of JavaScript or any language, and it's quite advanced. And in this case, I think you could only detect a mouth, because that's the type of shape that for which the author provided the so-called data file with
okay.
the data structure. I think you would need to download this separately the other type of data file for detecting faces in general. Anyway, this is interesting, and I am sure a lot of people will appreciate. Well, on my part, I also like to highlight of a couple of classes. Well, this month we did not have as many as in the past month, but we also do not have all the time to cover all the classes that were published, but just like to comment about this jQuery URL parser. Well, I'm not sure exactly why it requires jQuery, but the basic function of this package by Ansel Hartman from Switzerland is to do something very similar to the parse URL function of PHP. So if you have been programming PHP, you are probably familiar with the parse URL function. And so you will be able to use similar functionality. Actually, this class does a bit more than parse URL in PHP. It can extract not only the host domain, but also the subdomain. And also, for instance, if you have a path in the URL, you can split the actual base name of the path and the extension of the path for paths that end in dot something. And this is just a variant of something that parse URL does in PHP. Now another package that I also like to mention is named Gestures, and this one is quite impressive. Again, by Artur Sosins from Latvia. Again, he did submit a very impressive package that can recognize gestures that users can make, for instance, using the mouse, or probably, I'm not sure if it will recognize touch events, but it can at least recognize mouse events of the user clicking and dragging the mouse on screen, and by doing that, if the user sort of draws a certain shape, with this class, it can detect specific shapes, and you can configure, you can create the patterns of the shapes that it can recognize. And this is quite impressive, because if I wanted to think about this problem of recognizing shapes that the user may draw with the mouse, I would not be able to figure it out, because I would need to study algorithms that are able to perform this kind of detection. Michael, did you look into this package? What did you think about it?
Well, it's different. It's not something that really, how do I put it, having used touch tablets for a while, iPad for a while, it seems like, oh, yeah, of course. This is just something that, you can do. And it wasn't until I started thinking about how would you actually do this in code that and recognize these sorts of gestures and keep track of the state of that, that it seems that much more impressive. And probably some people that could do these sorts of things seems to have much stronger, perhaps, math backgrounds, large data set or large or advanced math stuff. I don't have that. So this stuff ends up seeming a bit more like magic to me.
Yeah.
And probably to somebody that has a strong algorithmic background, this is probably trivial stuff. And I'm not trying to trivialize what Arturs has done, but
right.
It seems magic to me. So
it is interesting, and for those that want to actually know more, there is a tutorial video that Arturs provided showing what it does in practice. Basically, you can see on the video that besides recognizing the actual gestures, the video also shows the shapes being drawn on a canvas in order to make them appear on the browser. And this is very interesting because when you draw a shape, you can see actually what you have drawn. And if you have completely a shape that it is ready to recognize, it will immediately shows that the name of the shape that was recognized. And it seems to be quite fast, so it's not something processor intensive that would require a fast machine to do this kind of detection. Well, anyway, we have covered several interesting classes. Hopefully next month we cover a few more as usual. And now we're going to move on to our final section, on which Michael will comment on the upcoming issue of the JS Mag magazine. So, Michael, what interesting articles can we expect for next JS Mag edition?
Well, we've got a few. Mike Schwartz is continuing. He's been doing a series on server-side JavaScript for a while, and really the past several issues, he's been talking about various enhancements and modifications to SilkJS, which is his server-side JavaScript framework. And he's carrying on with some improvements to SilkJS, which he talks about there. That I know about. We've also got a piece from Janine Meyer, who's she's written some books in the past and is a professor. I think she's a professor up someplace in New England area. For some reason, that's why. She may be from someplace else. But she's contributing a piece on data-driven content and how to combine that with doing some videos in Canvas. The demo that I saw was kind of neat, and we've got an article about how she works with that. We've got another piece from Trevor Burnham, who's actually the author of the CoffeeScript book from Pragmatic Programmers, I think. He wrote for us a few months ago, and he's got another piece this month on asynchronous JavaScript. And Arturs Sozin also has a piece for us on Titanium. Oh, so, yes.
The unknown Arturs.
Yes. So we've got some names we've had before, some new names, and there's a couple other pieces we may be able to squeeze in before next week. Just not sure on those right now.
Yeah, you are always open to get more from other people that may be listening.
Oh, jsmag.com. Yes, if anybody's interested in contributing, we're always looking for people to contribute their pieces. If you write a blog and you're thinking about, this might be a good blog article, it might be something we'd be interested in working with you with. And we have editors that work with you and help knock your, what might have been just a first draft article that you'd put on a blog. We'll work with you and help test out the code, help make sure that it reads properly. Maybe things are confusing to people on first pass. So we're a second set of eyes we're looking for people that have some interesting things to say about JavaScript.
Yeah, just wanted to ask, have you been having any new authors that were actually listeners of the podcast and learn about your magazine this way?
I don't know yet. There actually have been a few in the past couple of weeks that have registered, but I haven't talked to them to specifically know where they came from yet. When people register, I don't think there's a specific thing to say where did you come from. Maybe I should put that on there. But
curiosity.
We And sometimes we get, and if anybody's listening, this could have been you. Sometimes we get people that sign up and register, and I will email back and say, hey, welcome, how are you doing, and let's get going. And then they never follow through. So if you get something from me, please write back. Don't be shy. I don't bite.
Well, if Gmail does not eat your email messages in their mailboxes.
That could be it, too.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we have just ended our podcast. It was, I think it was an interesting podcast. You cover some topics that are not so usual. I just would like to apologize that I'm kind of slow today. Actually, I would say slower than usual because I'm kind of having a beginning of a flu. So
get well soon.
My nose is not working very well, and I feel a bit sleepy. But hopefully next month, I hope we have a more animated podcast than today. Hopefully, Michael helped to cheer up on this episode, and it was not so bad. But anyway, thank you all for listening, and feel free to post your comments, suggestions for future episodes in the blog on which the Lately in JavaScript podcast will appear in the JS Classes site. So on my behalf, that is all for now. Thank you.
Excellent. Bye-bye.